Hello and welcome to the Herb Doctor podcast with me, Katrina Hegarty, and Dr. Dealish Clare. Hi, Dealish.
Good morning, Katrina.
So this is part two of a two-part podcast about dementia.
Mm-hmm.
So on this podcast, it's more the holistic approach you're talking about on this one.
Yeah.
Okay, over to you.
Okay, so I'll just introduce you, if you didn't hear the last podcast, I'll introduce you to Anna, who came to see me. She was in her late 60s. She had a family history of dementia. And what she didn't know before she came is that she's actually pre-diabetic, a high blood pressure, has an unhelpful cholesterol profile, and also complains of poor sleep. Having considered all of those, all of the statistics to do with what's happening with dementia at the moment, and linking it to chronic inflammation, I advised her to investigate a Mediterranean diet and apply that with regular meals. And this would help her manage the binge eating problem, which she acknowledged. Move more, involved walking, a regular sleep pattern, and some all of this should all help with stress management. So I'm going to go on to, you know, that's all as is according to current wisdom. But there's a lot more that we can do with therapeutic interventions, even for lifestyle. Everybody has an individual narrative as to why their health is at any particular time. Mm-hmm. So it's taking that personal narrative and working out more things that can be useful. Also managing expectations of restoring health and restoring good balance. So having done all that, I'll just draw your attention to some other things that emerged in the clinical history. And one is that she has some bloating with her digestion and a little bit more wind than average, and it can sometimes be smelly. So they're kind of like refined details that probably wouldn't bear mention, but they're the kind of things that a medical herbalist will be very tuned into. So over the period of treatment, the therapeutic themes in terms of bearing witness and resolving were exploring her eating problems and the difficulties in eating more mindfully and eating regular meals, being more aware of good food, swallowing them, integrating them, appreciating them. So we have so much to be grateful for those of us who have access to good food locally. So appreciating all of that. We talked about enjoying her retirement. She's somebody who is in human resources, which was very engaged, actively kind of even solving personal, supporting people in their personal difficulties. She didn't have to solve the problems, but a lot to keep in her head. And she very much enjoyed her work. So it was about positively enjoying her retirement. Self-care. She's somebody who, I have many, many, many women patients who cook according to what everybody else in the family will eat. So their husbands or their partners don't eat lamb chops. So they really like the taste of lamb, but they never cook lamb chops, right? Because nobody else will eat them, you know. This is just a good example. And in fact, there's no reason why you can't cook lamb chops at the same time as grilling salmon. Or you can make a lamb stew for yourself and freeze some portions. There's absolutely no reason why you can't integrate these things. But it's that putting yourself last, which often leads people into poor self-care. So it's just highlighting that and going, oh, okay, yes, I am just as worthy or entitled to appreciate good living as the people that I'm caring for. And involved in all of this is more fun. This is often the question that really surprises people when at the end of, you know, a long narrative of everything that's wrong, I say, well, what do you do for fun? And for many people, this actually turns a lot of things around. Fun is the best way to relieve stress, you know. And sometimes I've been known to advise people to sing The Laughing Policeman along with you on YouTube. And we actually did some of the laughing policemen today to exercise our voices, and it brings the blood pressure down. What can I say? So fun is different for everybody, you know. So I often get people to reflect back. What did you used to do that was fun when you were 8, when you were 16, when you were 24? You know, and they kind of go, oh yeah, I forgot that. Oh, whoa, who knew, right? So these are just some of the subtle aspects that it's of taking care of people using herbal medicine as a collaborative approach. That I really kind of tune into. It's a very satisfying aspect of taking care of people. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the herbal, because I'm a herbalist, right? I need to do my job as well. I give people lots of homework to do. Some of it involves having fun, but I need to do my job as well. So I'm sitting back and thinking about Anna, and what is it about the state of all the cells as they bump into each other with the interstitial extracellular space? Where are all of the metabolic waste products, how are they being taken away by the lymph? Katrina informs me that lymph is all over social media at the moment. And it's something that I've been very, and as a herbalist, you're very attentive to, because it supports all of the eliminative systems in the body. The other one, which I'll come to another day, is the fascia. And these are both things that envelop all the cells, and are to do with, if we're talking about microinflammation, you can't do that without talking about this level of physiology and metabolism. So, liver herbs, is that where I started from? Liver herbs, there's three aspects of the liver that we want to support. One is the enzymes that detoxify, and I literally mean make substances in our body that we either ingest or that we make ourselves as part of the usual metabolism. It's not all got to do with the environment, it's also got to do with what we make ourselves, because we need to eliminate them and we need to detoxify them before we eliminate them. So supporting the enzymes does that. Also supporting the production of bile and the flow of bile. Mm. And this addresses the bloating and the poor gut flora. So the bile flows into the upper part of the digestive tract after the stomach, and there it's met with digestive enzymes. So we want the motility of the gut to be appropriate so that those two meet, and we want a good flow of bile. We want a lot of the waste metabolic products in the bile, and that all makes a beautiful orchestra. We've no idea how much of orchestration is involved to do with timing inside our bodies. That leads us on to alteratives. So the alteratives are a group of herbs. There's subcategories and classifications of what they're useful for, but they promote elimination from cell level to delivery to the outside world. So sweat, bowels, the hormone system involving the menses, and involving prostate health for men. Hormones aren't only to do with women. And everything to do with cholesterol, because sterols are directly related to sex hormones. Mm-hmm. Okay? And it's very important that they're managed right. Bowel function, and Anna was only opening her bowels 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. We want at least once a day as a herbalist, well-formed stool, doing the business, urine, lymph, and alteratives often overlap with bitters. So bitters are things that act in a supportive, alterative way in reducing the heat within the body. They're cooling for the body's systems. So it's like your internal heat, part of the heat regulation and elimination. So bitters feature very highly. So we've done liver herbs, alteratives, including bitters, and nervines. These are support for the nervous system functions. Along with bitters also has this effect. I love bitters and alteratives. All of the students who come to see me pretty much all know, and all of my patients will be very familiar with having dandelion root in their prescriptions. So nervines are anxiolytic, they reduce anxiety, nervous system stamina is supported, sleep restoration. Lots of people know about St. John's wort being an antidepressant. Traditionally, as a herbalist, the St. John's wort would be used for restoration of sleep and getting the most benefit for nourishing the nervous system from the sleep that you do have. So it doesn't increase sleep and it's not sedative, but it increases the restorative value of sleep to an individual depending on their own sleep pattern. And then nervous system stamina involves nourishment, and that would be something like wild oats, right? As in, you know the expression to sow your wild oats? Mm-hmm. When you're overstretching your amorous nervous system and hormone system and libido and all the rest of it, you need restoration for the stamina in the nervous system, hence sowing your wild oats. Mm-hmm. Our English language gives us a lot of, or all languages gives a lot of clues as to why the herbs are used in a traditional sense. So it's knowledge that has wisdom and experience behind it. Mm-hmm. Loving it, right? Very often this is supported by any of the science that's available. But science is knowledge, whereas this is the wisdom of experience. And I love it when the two come together. That's my favourite. Okay, so that's the nervous system. Antispasmodics. Antispasmodics are indicated for Anna because of her high blood pressure. Because blood pressure is where the nervous system is sending too many signals to tighten the small blood vessels. Also, I have a theory, right, which has never been tested, which is keeping the extracellular fluid interstitial space clear and cool by all of the actions we've described already will also help the blood pressure. Because for a lot of people, it's just all congested. Everything is... For those listening in the car, I'm blowing out my cheeks and then pressing them in. There's no space between my fingers and my cheeks. So there's no room for the circulation at interstitial cell level. That's a real concept there, guys. So antispasmodics and anti-inflammatory. And if you do the research, Google virtually any medicinal herb and they will describe it as anti-inflammatory. I'm looking for, and the skill of a herbalist is choosing from the range of herbs that would have an anti-inflammatory effect that would be useful for you. So for instance, with the bloating, I haven't used chamomile, it would be a good one. And this tells you that there's about 40 herbs I could choose from for Anna that's in my dispensary. So how do I choose the ones that do the 2-fers, 3-fers or 4-fers, you know, that they have multiple actions based on my understanding of her individual physiology. Okay, so we'll see what I put. That's kind of how I conceptually think with each patient. I'm thinking, what herbs do I need to nudge these elements of Anna's physiology personally, individually, in order for her to feel better? Because that's why people go to a doctor or herbalist, they want to feel better. Okay, so the first tincture that I gave her, all my tinctures are 1 and 3, and that's the concentration of water to alcohol. All tinctures contain a little bit of alcohol, but in any individual dose, there's no more than you would find in a portion of ripe banana, right? So I do say this frequently to people because it's their choice. I often use teas as well. So there is an option when you see a herbalist. You can have glycerides or teas or syrups as well. So Anna had no reason for tinctures not to be used. I did forget to say that she's not on any medication. So it's important to outline that as well.
Yeah.
Tinctures were Agrimony Eupatoria. Agrimony is a hedgerow herb in Ireland. And I'm using it for toning the tissues, including the gut. Because addressing the gut is always an issue. For somebody who comes with symptoms like Anna, I don't ask if they have digestive problems. I say, what digestive problems do you have? And it rarely goes amiss. And that kind of frees people to tell their story, you know. So agrimini upatoria is for toning the tissues, including the gut. Valerian officinalis is because of her stress and anxiety and difficulty sleeping. Ginkgo biloba is for the circulation, the high blood pressure. It has an influence on those, very well researched. Viburnum opulus is an antispasmodic. The high blood pressure that she's experiencing is because of muscle tension in the arterioles. So you have the large blood vessels, the medium-sized blood vessels, and then the smallest arteries. Before you come to the capillaries, which have no muscle, it's just an exchange membrane, if you like. So the very small arteries are just ever so slightly tight. Mm. So the antispasmodics here, that's the specific indication for them. And then we have crataegus, which is hawthorn, leaves, flowers or berries. And it is for supporting stamina for the heart. If somebody has high blood pressure, their heart is working slightly harder with each beat. And the heart beats 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So be nice to your heart. And then also I prescribe Gymnema sylvestris. Gymnema sylvestris specifically for her is to deal with the sugar cravings that she's having, because it reduces the impact of sugar so that it makes it not taste sweet. If you were to take a half a teaspoon of Gymnema sylvestris and then take a half a teaspoon of just pure granulated sugar, the sugar no longer tastes like sugar. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Plants are amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then there's also DOC, Rumex crispus, which is it's a stimulatory laxative, but in that dose it's a very gentle effect. Given that people buy Senecot, which is Senna pods, I would use a tincture of Senna would last in my dispensary for a whole year, despite two herbalists working, three now. We now have an Ayurvedic practitioner practicing with us as well, Dr. Sharma. So the Rumex is just a gentle push for the elimination of the stool. And then Artium Lapa is our lovely alteratives, because we want to increase the circulation everywhere, right? The sweating, the urine, we want to increase elimination across the board. And this amounts to 160 mils, and it's 7.5 mils three times a day. Mm-hmm. Here's the important things that I really want to get across on the podcasts. Three times a day, yes, that's important. You don't take it all at once. These are some of the questions I get asked all the time. It's like, would you eat all of your food once a day? Mm-hmm. No, because you need your energy throughout the day. So the digestion and metabolism and use of herbs is more like your food than a drug that you take once a day. Usually with a sustained released mechanism or whatever. It puzzles me that in an era where people are more aware that eating food as it's traditionally been used and cooked and prepared is the best way to go for your health, people are still very unquestioning about taking single constituents with, you know, prolonged action and lots of excipients, which are the other powders and things that are made up for capsules, and that they seem very uncritiquing of those. So, I mean, that's just one of those things, you know. So after the first month, Anna reported that she was sleeping better. She was eating good food more regularly. Now, without even concentrating on it, she then felt less shamed about her binge eating, which hadn't stopped, but it was less, and she was less self worrying about it, not dwelling on it, not thinking about it for the 2 days later, you know. So she was able to be kinder to herself. So she also walked as she chose to walk for 30 minutes a day, and she did this a lot more frequently and consistently. Consistency, consistency, consistency. If you're buying a house, location, location, location. If you want to improve your health, digestion, digestion, digestion. And if you want to really feel better, you do all this consistently, consistently, consistently. By way of her measurements, her blood pressure dropped 4 points. The upper reading, the systolic reading, dropped by 4 points. And the lower reading, the diastolic, dropped by 2 points. Great congratulations were in order because she was no longer hypertensive. Brilliant. She was so happy, you know, and she was enthusiastic to continue. And this really is the message, that you start where you can and you keep building, mm-hmm. all right? And the results are a motivation in themselves. For the first month, a lot of people rely on my motivation and my commitment, and I think it's good, so they've invested in this. But they're not sure, because we don't have a history in our last two or three generations that this is real medicine. So, yeah, really? I know Dr. Claire believes in it, but, you know, really, does it work? Then people get engaged because the results are demonstrable to them.
Sure.
One person, N equals one, it works for them. Okay, that's the science of it. After the second month, one of the things from the second month was that she ran out of medicine 10 days before her appointment, and she didn't renew her tincture bottle. Mm. All right. We do provide a measurement for people, but often people are guessing, they overestimate a little bit. It's not pure science. You know, if you take a teaspoon and 1 mil rather than just a teaspoon, there's no problem. But so sometimes it's not exactly accurate. So for 2 days, I wouldn't worry. But for 10 days, you're going, okay, we've supported, we've nourished, we've increased the bile, we've done all this. And then we've suddenly stopped. And the body goes, here we go again, right back to our old habits, right? And over 10 days, they've forgotten. Right, the cells have tincture amnesia, and we have medical amnesia, where we forget, you know, don't know where that analogy is going. Anyway, the important thing is, if it's more than 2 days before your appointment, phone the clinic, your provider, and say, can I have another bottle of medicine to collect or to be couriered out, so that I'm taking the medicine consistently. If you want to make something better, there's no point in putting a dressing on it day one to day 21 and then leaving it for 10 days, because the healing ceases. The cleansing, the wound healing. So it's the same concept, right? And particularly in the first 4 or 5 months, you know, after that, the body is more tuned into a new way of working. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is especially while this is a very active healing process rather than just maintenance. That's the point I'm making there. So the second prescription was very similar. Did I mention the dandelion root in the first one? Anyway, there was dandelion root. I did. OK, so the second one, the only difference was that I added Artemisia absinthum, 5 mils. And capsicum 5 mils, which is a very small amount over 7 days. It's less than 1 mil a day, so it's quite gentle. But it's a little bit of extra bitters, and the capsicum is actually quite good for high blood pressure. So you can introduce that into the diet as well. This is another learning thing, you know, especially if there's any herbal medicine students out there. It took me a long time to learn that if something is working, don't mess with it, right? It's doing its job. And the patient will come at a point where you kind of go, no, I need a complete revision, right? A lot of the time, when I see that somebody has been on a prescription for 2 or 3 months, and I'll show you that with the next one, I kind of go, okay, it's time to rotate, because if we have the same bowl of soup made from the same ingredients every day, we're well nourished with those ingredients, but we might need variety of constituents in order to be in order to be helpful. Okay. So after the second month, her clothes were definitely more comfortable. She felt less bloated in the evening. She was more focused at work and could follow the plot of a film. And we talked about her running out of the medicines. So the third month, I decided to just rotate things around a little bit. I substituted Angelica Archangelica for the Agrimony. And that's just a more widespread action, a little bit of bitter action on the digestive system. And it's a local herb. I use local hedgerow herbs as often as possible. The others, and I substituted Rosa Canina for the Gymnema sylvestris, because her diet and regular meals were so much better, and the Rosa Canina is very good again for supporting the cardiovascular system in this case, and it's rich in vitamin C. And we kept up with the artemisia and the capsicum. So how good did that do? Month three, her clothes were definitely looser, and she was anticipating a shopping trip because she could do with the change of wardrobe. And she said, I haven't felt this sharp in years. And her blood pressure was now well within normal limits of 126 over 84. So I think that gives, after 6 months, I haven't done the prescription for that, but this is just an overview. She had dropped a trouser size, not in 2 years, but in 6 months. And this is another feature of working as a herbalist. I always give people longer time to achieve things. So they feel even more empowered. Like, I give them the longest time where this is a reasonable thing to happen. Often they do it sooner, especially if they engage as well as Anna did. And so that's an extra bonus, if you like. Her long range sugars had come within the normal top of the range of normal parameters. So she was no longer pre-diabetic. Wowzers. Okay. Her blood pressure stayed within normal blood pressures. The unhelpful cholesterol, LDL, was lower. It was previously 4.2 with a normal range of less than 3. She was sleeping an average of 7.5 hours and felt rested in the morning. Her cognitive complaints had resolved and she was much, much less anxious. But I would also specify less fearful. I think that's actually a different. Anxiety is a medically derived coin, but what she presented with was fearfulness. So she was a lot less fearful. So addressing physiology, terrain disorders solved her mental clarity issues and relieved her anxiety. She felt much better. She had reduced risk or consequences of many other inflammatory disorders. Anna did wonder why other doctors hadn't offered her similar solutions, and the answer to that involved the 10 years of writing uprooted medicine. So I don't have a short answers for that. I will say that doctors are trained to diagnose disease, not reverse dysfunction. We're good at spotting Alzheimer's when it happens, and then the medical attitude is it's as though this appears out of the blue, whereas it's something that's part of preventive medicine. There's little recognition of reversible metabolic cognitive impairment. And one of the commonest ones is chronic constipation. You know, this really does not do your physiology good. And now she's doing everything possible to prevent dementia, and she has cognitive clarity to enjoy her life while doing it.
Great.
And this isn't an unusual case history. This is absolutely typical. And I hope by addressing her fear for dementia, I've actually addressed a lot of other life hacks, if you like, to use the current phraseology. Okay, everybody.
That brings us to the end of part two, where we looked at the herbal approach to dementia and how gentle, supportive choices can help us alongside conventional care. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please like and subscribe and share as well. And we will talk with you very, very soon. Thank you, Dilish. It's been really insightful. And we will chat again soon. Yes?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.